You are entering the MSP Zone, a podcast for the managed services community, covering news, analysis, and interviews from around the globe. Elevate your MSP game by staying in the MSP Zone. And now, your host, Charles Weaver.
Good day. Welcome to the MSP Zone. Today we're talking about cloud. Talking about the public cloud, and even more specifically, we're talking about, can you save money in the public cloud? And I know that that could be a very contentious issue. I know that it has people who say, hey, let's go to the cloud because it's going to save us a ton of money. And then what happens? It doesn't save them a ton of money. It actually ends up costing them more, or it's not exactly the way they thought it would play out technically or from another feature set. We're going to kind of discuss that and elaborate and unpack a lot of the underlying issues related to features, functionality, pricing, costs, but from an MSP standpoint, but also as consumers, how should MSPs be expressing and verbalizing what the public cloud can, and more importantly, what it can't do from a financial standpoint. And here we have, first time on the MSP Zone, a guest from Mainstream Technologies, Mr. Christopher Church. Christopher, welcome to the MSP Zone.
Yeah, happy to be here today. Thank you very much.
So, you know, let's start with an easy one. Well, first of all, What do you do at Mainstream Technologies so people have a quick understanding?
Sure. So I'm a solution architect, and I work in a pre- and post-sales role, but a lot of my time is spent working with customers, making sure that we understand their business objectives and that the solutions that we're bringing to them are, you know, aligned with those objectives, and that that we're providing a good value from an MSP perspective.
Sure. So I'm going to take you back to 2009, and that period stands out for a lot of us who were, you know, who remember it and were in managed services at the time. There was a major shift in the way that service providers approached really everything, right? I mean, just managing Exchange servers, managing, it wasn't even Office 365 at the point. I think it was still BPOS for Microsoft. But the global financial crisis caused a lot of rapid change. And one of the changes that took place, that as I recall it, was this concept of we have to move to the cloud because that is going to save us money. When you hear that, what do you think?
So the first thought that comes to mind is a lot of those folks were surprised. So many of them made the jump, and they get a few months into it. Sometimes it didn't even take that long, and they realized that while their costs were shifting, from maybe a capital expense to more of an operational expense, it didn't necessarily turn out to be less expensive, particularly over the long term. And a lot of that, kind of went back to, in my opinion, the maybe some of the rush to adopt a public cloud, and then maybe the, lack of good analysis and that went into that move, along with making sure that that it really made sense from a business perspective.
So it sounds like it was more of a they. I mean, I don't even know how it got started, that rumor that it was. Going to save you money. I suppose I could name one or two companies globally that might have profited from that type of rumor going out there. But, it was the providers like you guys who were really on the front lines trying to, kind of talk customers, not down from going into the cloud, but really look, having a realistic perspective of what it meant to shift from on-premise infrastructure to cloud-based infrastructure. And I'm not even saying that that's bad. I'm just saying that there obviously something was missing in that financial review.
Yeah, and it was challenging in some respects because the big vendors would get involved. The public cloud vendors might get involved, and their messaging was pretty aggressive. And you get a C-level contact within an organization that you're working with that has seen this marketing and, you know, is kind of buying into the concept. And, you know, the last thing you want to do as an MSP is tell the customer that they have a bad idea. I mean, you have to be a little bit more tactful about that. And, sure. You know, in some occasions, these initiatives would just gain momentum to the point where, you would find yourself in these migrations and hoping for the best at the end of it. And, you know, sometimes they would work out, but often they wouldn't. And that would leave the customer with asking, you know, what went wrong here? Why are we spending so much? And why is this not aligned as well as we thought it would be?
And for those out there in the audience listening, I think it would be helpful for us to kind of distinguish between, you know, we just used an example of, you know, what was, in my opinion, there's a lot of small business exchange server activities, business that was taking place, you know, at the MSP level, at the SMB MSP level, that really was challenged and eventually went away almost overnight as BPOS, soon to be Office 365 and now Microsoft 365, you know, established itself and said, hey, look, this is the new model. Christopher, you really are looking at this almost separately even from that, I think you call it a more of a commodity, you know, the Google Apps, Microsoft 365 versus other types of public cloud services that MSPs can get involved in. Could you elaborate a little bit on that distinction?
Yeah, so that's correct. So, there are, certain, bulk or commodity functions that I call them, but I mean, really we're talking about email and file storage. Those functions make perfect sense to move to, a cloud-based service like Office 365 or Google Docs or, name one of them, but there's really well-developed business case around that. And those offerings are very mature. And, frankly, they have a lot of great features, particularly around compliance and security that customers can readily take advantage of. You know, what I'm referring to here is more of from the public cloud from the standpoint of, virtual machines and other services outside of those, email and file storage, the full-on lift and shift, if you will, of your on-premises workloads over to a public cloud type of scenario, and then what goes along with that, and then some of the pitfalls that you can run into.
Right. And that's not to say that those commodity services, A, aren't in legitimate demand, and B, can't be somewhat lucrative. It's just that they're a little bit more price sensitive, shall we say. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah.
Is cloud right for everyone? In your professional experience, I mean, is there still, a decade plus on from 2009 in the global financial crisis, is there still this concept of everybody needs to and ought to be moving to the cloud? What say you?
Yeah, so, approaching this from a completely kind of detached perspective where, I don't necessarily have any skin in either game, the on-premises or the cloud game, if you will. Both of them have their own challenges from a managed services perspective and opportunities. What I've seen, just particularly over the past, 5 to 7 years is, no, it doesn't necessarily make sense for everyone. We've seen kind of the more of an adoption of a hybrid approach for many customers where, maybe instead of completely shifting their infrastructure to the public cloud, maybe there are certain functions that they can move to a public cloud besides email and file storage that we've already discussed that can be beneficial to their overall business objectives. But, without doing a little bit of homework, and some analysis, it's really easy to get yourself into a spot where you're just spending way more than you should be on public cloud and, potentially even getting a lower quality of end user experience and, potentially even having a lower quality experience from your customers as well.
So it sounds like if I was a customer and I came to you and said, hey, Christopher, I really, I don't know, I'm making this up as I go, but maybe it's a cost thing. Maybe it's a perception of I'm just spending way too much on my existing in-house infrastructure. Maybe it's a, you know, I don't like that infrastructure being in our office because A, you know, the pandemic has sent most people home. So I don't like it being there unattended. I mean, I suppose there's a lot of that happening. There's a number of financial and technical and probably many other facets to this. Should I go to the cloud? Is this what you see when you talk to your customers, and how do you deal with those issues?
Yeah, so you know, everything you mentioned there, you know, comes up in the conversation or you know we've encountered when dealing with customers. You know, so sometimes it's a matter of look, I don't want to own or manage on-premises infrastructure anymore. I mean, that comes up very often. You know, other times we may be in a situation where maybe the customer's outgrown, you know, their on-premises data center or something like that. And then all of these things are tied in strongly with just the overall perception that the public cloud is the, or could be, you know, kind of the be-all, end-all and the right solution to solve all of those problems.
Yeah. All right. Well, so that's kind of a segue into my next question, which is why do some companies, and I'm gonna include this in with one caveat, which is why do some companies who have a managed services relationship, meaning they outsource to a managed service provider, and I'm not saying your company, I'm just saying generically, why do some companies fail in their cloud experience? Is it purely a lack of being asked those probing questions?
So I think that's certainly part of it. So, you know, as managed services providers and, you know, the cloud, public cloud especially is, I mean, this is a mature offering now. So I think it's incumbent on us to be having those conversations with our customers around, you know, can this be included? Can a public cloud solution be included as part of the overall lifecycle management strategy for, you know, for the IT? For the particular business you're working with. And then how do we go about analyzing that? I mean, it's much better from an MSP's perspective to be the person starting that conversation as opposed to having that conversation be driven maybe by an internal champion or internal resource that's already convinced that it's, you know, the best move for the customer, but maybe they're not the ultimate decision maker, but they're an influencer. Or finding yourself in a position where another vendor has come in and engaged in that conversation and leaving the customer to wonder, well, why you've never mentioned that as the incumbent MSP.
Right. So a little like the pharmaceutical rep saying to the doctor, you know, how come you haven't mentioned this to your patient yet?
Right.
Wink, exactly. Wink, nudge, nudge. Do you find that the, how often, and I don't need examples, just some anecdotes from you if you don't mind. Are you saying no to a lot of customers who are saying, hey, let's go to the cloud when they don't? Are you saying you should go to the cloud when they don't bring it up? Or is it a mixture of, hey, let's balance this out a little bit? Is it more often a hybrid versus one or the other these days?
Yeah, so we're saying let's do the analysis. So let's figure out what the business objectives are and the business advantages are to public cloud, and then let's take a step back and reframe the discussion away from strictly cost savings. Figure out how well it aligns with business objectives, and then really do an analysis of the workloads to figure out what could this potentially cost if we make this move? You know, looking at the workloads in terms of how they're sized and provisioned, and then how that aligns, which cloud provider that may align best with. You know, there are several out to choose from. A couple of them are more popular and mentioned more often than others, but there are a number of really good analysis tools out there that MSPs and end users can take advantage of to really help them get a handle on what their potential OPEX in public cloud might look like for, you know, based on their current workloads and how they utilize them.
Do you find that, are there situations where you've seen a notable savings, as the title of our kind of conversation implies, where actual savings from the public cloud shift has occurred? Does that happen?
Yeah, it certainly happens, and see it more often with particular workloads. So like, for example, I'll use on-premises SQL as an example. So there are several occasions I run into where, using a SQL as a service offering, from Microsoft Azure, for example, might make more sense financially and performance-wise to do that in the public cloud, as opposed to trying to build and augment and maintain an infrastructure on-premises to give a customer that same level of performance. In other examples, bulk virtual machine workloads, file, print, Active Directory, et cetera, et cetera. We see that, some of those don't always make sense. File, maybe that's better to look at OneDrive or a service like that for that. Active Directory kind of runs the gamut. Sometimes it's better on-premises. Sometimes it's better in the cloud. Sometimes it's a hybrid approach is better for that as well. And a lot of it kind of comes down to, what's the customer comfortable with in terms of control? So with public cloud, one of the drawbacks is you do give up a little bit of the control and visibility in the infrastructure. And, that's another discussion that the MSP should be having with that customer when they're doing the analysis is, what does this actually look like in its end state in terms of the visibility and the control that you're going to have?
Yeah, I mean, that kind of brings us to an interesting question or a topic of security. I think very few of us would question that Microsoft, Google, Amazon, IBM, all the big players who have public clouds takes security fairly seriously, but that doesn't mean that they're spending a lot of money, that they're getting the security for that particular customer that's going to be right. Can you talk to us a little bit about security in your perspective and how that plays into maybe the financials of the cloud? Like I'm kind of hinting here that there seems like there may be some overlay security services that would be necessary to make the public cloud not just possible but safe.
Yeah, so my view on that is you need to manage your public cloud security just with the same enthusiasm that you would want to manage your on-premises security. So granted, there are some things that from a security perspective that automatically happen when you're provisioning workloads in the public cloud. However, there are a number of add-ons and whatnot that you can use to augment your security posture in the public cloud. All of those things have a cost. Not all of them necessarily align perfectly with what you're doing on premises. Some of them do, some of them are a little bit better, but this is another good reason to take the time and look at your, not only your perimeter security, but how you're securing your internal workloads and then figure out what public cloud feature sets are going to map best to that. And if you're lacking something, what you could potentially utilize in the public cloud to augment that, make it more secure and more capable. And then most importantly is make sure that you factor in what the costs are going to be associated with that.
So this is a little bit of a tricky question, but Christopher, I have faith in you that you'll do an awesome job. How often do you find yourself presented with a client or prospective client that has a belief that the public cloud is where they need to be and ought to be, where you actually talk them out of it or talk them out of their plan, right? Maybe their plan is go all in and you say hybrid, or you agree with their plan, but you make some modifications to say secure it or to make it more optimal for their business objectives. I mean, are you having those conversations and are they ultimately successful? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I can't think of an occasion where I've talked someone out of making a move to public cloud when they, you know, particularly if they've already kind of made up their mind that's where that's the best direction to head. However, have been involved in a number of conversations where we've had an opportunity to slow down the adoption and take a little bit more measured approach, make sure that the analysis has been done of the workloads, make sure the sizing is correct. And then something I haven't mentioned yet, but making sure that the customer clearly understands how the billing works in the public cloud, you know, on demand billing versus committed use, that type of thing. And then, like I mentioned earlier, making sure that their on-premises feature set aligns with what they would like to do in the cloud. And then if there are features that they're lacking or add-ons, you know, that can improve their security posture or performance, that we're bringing those to their attention and making that part of the overall cloud migration discussion.
Right. I want to get back to that that billing question that you just raised, because I think it's really interesting and may get to the ultimate you know, kind of topic of the day, which is, you know, is that what's causing this misperception perhaps in you know, public cloud being an automatic money saver. Could you maybe elaborate about how the billing differs from traditional on-premise? I mean, I get the CapEx OpEx concept, but where do you see customers frequently making a misstep when it comes to public cloud billing that has an impact?
Yeah, so there are a couple of areas seem to come up often in discussion. So, you know, the first one I mentioned previously, and that was, you know, everything in the public cloud has a cost associated with it. So not only your, you know, CPU or your compute consumption, but storage, IO, you know, networking, firewall, load balancer, egress bandwidth, everything has a cost associated with it in the public cloud. Second to that are the billing models. So, you know, pay-as-you-go billing is really popular. I think that's where customers just entering public cloud typically will find themselves. You know, it's, you know, usually a by the hour or by a fraction of the hour billing, depending on which provider that you're dealing with. But pay-as-you-go or on-demand billing also has the highest rates associated with it. So while you have a high degree of flexibility, you also have the highest rates and the most potential for, you know, some fairly drastic fluctuations in your monthly cloud spend.
Is that because you're paying a premium for that flexibility?
Yeah. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. So then on the flip side of that, you can look at, you know, committed use or reserved instances, where essentially what you're doing with those is you're committing to a level of spend over a period of time. You know, it could be 1 to 3 years, for example. Most cloud providers are going to offer a significant discount on that. Could be anywhere from 40 to 60%, depending on the term. That's fairly attractive from a pricing standpoint. However, you know, the downside of that is you're going to be locked into that spend or locked into that commitment for that term. And then another thing that folks will overlook from time to time around committed use is when you lock that rate in, that's the rate that you're stuck with for that term, if you will, even if the provider drops the price of the service. So, for example, if you look historically, if you go back over the past, you know, 3 to 5 years over, you know, and you look at what the big cloud providers, public cloud providers have been charging for just some of their, you know, some of the bulk services, storage and compute and that type of thing, we've typically seen about an 8% reduction in those costs, direct costs to the consumers annually. You won't get to take advantage of that if you're in a committed use or reserved instance type of scenario. So it's just something else to keep in mind.
Yeah. I mean, I think these are factors that, you know, certainly as MSPs, you know, we may deal with them a lot, but I don't get the sense that, you know, the external user may have this kind of concept. Not that they're not smart. It's just that they're, you know, if they're more of an IT director and they're not used to working in the public cloud, let's say like you as an MSP are, you're just naturally not going to have, you know, this type of thing front of mind.
Yeah. And the information out there, I mean, if you just go to the front end website of any public cloud vendor, on the positive side, there's a ton of very, very useful information there that you can draw from. The downside of that is the volume of it is just really overwhelming. And trying to use one of the online calculators, if you will, to figure out what your spend might be could be one of the worst places to start, just simply because of the complexity involved, the number of services to choose from, and you can quickly find yourself making some pretty extraordinary guesses about things and be completely misaligned at the end of the day then in terms of spend. So it's just really a good idea to dig a little bit deeper, pump the brakes a little bit, and use one of the analysis tools to analyze your on-premises workloads first, and then start having a discussion about how well that aligns with the business case.
It seems to me that you will, after a certain period of time, accumulate as an MSP a vast amount of information, really useful information about other customers, similar scenarios where you could say to a prospect, hey, look, we really know what you're talking about because we've done it a handful of times before, and this is how it works. I mean, that's got to be almost invaluable experience to lend to that customer.
Yeah, totally agree. And, you know, just one of the great advantages of working with, you know, a quality MSP is that collective experience that MSP is going to have working with a wide range of customers, some of them potentially in that customer's vertical that you're dealing with, and then, you know, others outside of the vertical. But being able to bring that collective experience and some of it from the school of hard knocks, if you will, in terms of, hey, we've seen this work, or, you know, other scenarios where maybe it hasn't gone well, or just a more measured approach is maybe warranted.
Yeah, I think I already know the answer to this, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it for the benefit of the audience out there. But, you know, how would you suggest that MSPs help their customers maximize that public cloud experience today?
Yeah, so probably first and foremost, make sure you're having the discussion. You know, include it as part of your regular touch point with the customer. Make the public cloud analysis or discussion part of your, you know, your regular lifecycle management that you're doing with the customer. And get out in front of it. I think the customers appreciate when we're teaching them things, right? When we're bringing information to them that may benefit their business. I think that puts us on a good footing and helps us stay in that trusted advisor role, if you will. And then secondly, make sure you understand the customer's business objectives, not only short term, but also the long term. And having that combined with a good analysis of the workloads, and being able to, again, I keep saying align, but making sure that whatever move that you're considering for the public cloud really makes sense from a business perspective, you know, beyond cost. I think those are going to be a huge advantage to the MSP and to the customer in the long run.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I mean, you know, the takeaway for those of you out there in the audience, MSP and end user alike, is not that public cloud is bad. It's just make sure that what your goals are properly aligned and can be achieved through that public cloud experience. And quite frankly, you know, Christopher, I don't know how you'd think, but also of the MSP doing the work, right? Because most of this time, most of these scenarios, it's not just the end user doing it on their own. They want the help of an MSP to guide them, not just throughout the implementation, but ongoing management. True?
Yeah, exactly. Especially if it's an MSP that has been through this before with other customers, and again, can bring that collective experience to the table and help that customer, help guide them really through the through their public cloud journey, if you will.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Christopher Church from Mainstream Technologies. Appreciate you hopping on the MSP Zone, sharing your wisdom and experience with us on this important issue. Definitely encourage you to come back and share your thoughts on future episodes, if you don't mind.
Yeah, thanks for having me today.
All right, this is Charles Weaver with the MSP Zone. Until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a like. Make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so you'll get notified when future episodes are released. We will see you next time in the MSP Zone.